Hi, this is Phil Taylor, host of CIUT Friday Morning. Every Friday morning between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m., we have film reviews and interviews by Daniel Garber, our film critic, theater reviews and interviews by Lynn Slotkin, our theater critic, and passionate playgoer, and a deeper look at classical music by Philip Conlon. We also discuss the headlines affecting our world. CIUT Friday Morning, we give voice to radio that matters to you. CIUT 89.5 FM, the new sound of your city.
Music from the Americas, the Map Room Session. The free weekday summer concert series continues on Wednesday, August 12th, when CIUT welcomes veteran Cajun and Zydeco outfit Swamparella. The Pigeonhawk String Band perform on Thursday, August 13th, and on Friday, August the 14th, Luau or Die play their distinct surf sound. Other upcoming acts include reggae artist Len Hammond, reggae dub performer Michael St. George, blues award winner Julian Foth, the Afrobeat and reggae group Fugitive Minds, and more. Go to www.ciut.fm to see the full artist lineup. The sessions run until August 27th. All of the performances begin at 1 p.m. We'd love you to be a member of the studio audience. The Map Room is located in Hart House, U of T. Music from the Americas, the Map Room Sessions, are presented by CIUT, Hart House, and sponsored by Steve's Music.
Right here, right now. Every day, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city. Toronto.
Good afternoon. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor, and with me is Phil Conlon. How you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
Phil has a program each Wednesday, 6 p.m., Classical Underground, CIUT. Today we're going to talk with Laura Flounders. Sarah, pardon me. I do have a tendency to want to call her Laura. Sarah Flounders, International Action Center, about an upcoming meeting in New York that is kind of unique, in that they're going to make this available through YouTube, et cetera. She's going to probably explain that to us. We expect at 5:30 to be speaking with a lawyer, Brett Grote, who represents Abu Mumia Jamal. And Mumia Jamal, widely known around the world by one name, Mumia, is in poor health. He has hepatitis C, as do apparently 20% of the prisoners in the United States. This is can be eventually life-threatening, and as a matter of fact, is in his case, in my opinion. But we're going to be speaking to Brett Grote about 5:30. I think we're joined now by Sarah Flounders. Are you there, Sarah?
Hi, yes, Bill. I'm here.
We're really glad to have you, Sarah. There's a meeting being called in New York. You're one of the speakers. It's titled Syria After the Iran-U.S. Sanctions Agreement. What's ahead, diplomacy or military escalation? That's going to be Tuesday, August 11, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Sharp, I notice. What is the urgency of this meeting? It strikes me that this seems something very important is going on, in your opinion.
Well, there's, of course, all the attention is focused on the coming struggle in the U.S. Congress to pass the Iran sanctions agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great deal of attention on the enormous multi-million dollar fund to oppose this bill. But the deeper question is, will these reactionary forces that are mobilizing to oppose any agreement that would lead to a lessening of U.S. threats in the region limit themselves just to scare ads in the New York Times and to lobbying members of the U.S. Congress?
Mm-hmm.
What else are they planning? And we need to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because under the guise of combating terrorist factions and so on, claiming that they're fighting ISIL, and they barely are at all, and on the other hand, they're arming others and ISIL, and openly asserting military support for a particular group, this Unit 30 that they're organizing, a moderate force, so-called, that they say they'll back up with U.S. airstrikes. Mm-hmm. And they have newly negotiated bases in Turkey. Most ominous is this declaration of a safe zone inside Syria, bringing up a lot of the past terminology of no-fly and free-fire zone, so to speak. So really, Washington has put in place all the necessary pieces of war. What it's lacking is a provocation.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been a real escalation of putting in place the bombers, the excuses, the relations, and at the same time knowing that there are powerful forces among the militarists who are determined to sabotage.
Yeah. Excuse me, just one moment. Sarah, we think maybe there's a radio on there. There's a little bit of an echo in your voice. Is there?
There's a big echo in the voice, but I don't have a radio on.
Oh, okay.
It's almost...
You are innocent. You are innocent of all charges. I'm sorry, but you might just adjust. Maybe you could get a little closer to it. It's just somehow an echo worked in. If you don't mind, I'll tell you what let's make a second call to you and then make sure we get your voice clear. We'll be calling you right back. Thank you.
Okay, that's fine.
This is Sarah Flounders. And the issue is this conference. And I'll just tell you the details. It's you can listen to it via a conference call audio, and you dial 712-432-6100, and you can access it. There's an access code 418-531-16 and with the pound sign. Or I suggest this is probably the best way. You can watch live on ustream.tv/channel and then /IA Center. By the way, remember to spell it the way the Americans spell center, E-R. That would be available on Ustream. And you can watch it on YouTube Tuesday at 11 p.m. at iacenter.org. And we are once again joined by Sarah Flounders. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Phil.
My apologies.
There's still an echo.
Could you tell us about some of the speakers? I noticed Dr. Gius Musa, Syrian American Forum. Can you tell us about him?
Well, he's a very important voice with a group of Syrian Americans who, from the very beginning, have opposed U.S. war against their country and have seen the devastating consequences. All of these folks are people who have family and extended family still in Syria, where now more than a third of the population is displaced by the war.
Yeah, and by the way,
more than 100,000 mercenaries operating with U.S. arming and funding, and Saudi and Turkish arming and funding today in Syria.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Syrian Americans end up being targeted themselves if they speak up. We know in Canada it's very difficult for Syrian Canadians to say anything because they're treated like some kind of a threat. People are losing their civil liberties, civil rights under this situation. I notice you also have Ramsey Clark, the former Attorney General of the United States, and he and yourself visited, I know, Syria, and then you have Margaret Kimberly of the Black Agenda Report, Larry Hamm, People's Organization for Progress, Joe Lombardo, United National Anti-War Coalition, and yourself, Sarah Flounders. Now, I got this issue, the way it's been portrayed, really, and I know you would, this must be on your mind, that we've had this agreement, and the American public apparently and politicians are arguing loudly about it, agreement with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and some are interpreting that agreement as maybe an opportunity for the U.S. to put pressure on Syria or to become more aggressive with Syria, thinking that Iran might be, frankly, sidelined a bit. What about that?
That's very much part of the danger that right now, given all the assurances of diplomacy, it's also a way of exerting a great deal of pressure on Iran not to back up Syria. And, of course, their help has been very important. And also to continue to create a greater and greater destabilization in Syria and to make it seem unsolvable until everyone concedes to the U.S. demand of regime change. Mm-hmm. And this continues as the demand, regime change. The government must collapse. They want a situation like they have in Libya, like they have in Iraq, a completely compartmentalized, destabilized population that has no ability to assert its sovereignty. Mm-hmm. That's what they want for Syria.
Mm-hmm. So this is a very much a high-stakes moment here. I mean, I think we interviewed you about this matter. Turkey has now used its warplanes to strike targets inside Syria. Of course, the United States now has positioned itself as though it's considered natural that the U.S. would fly over Syrian airspace and strike Syrian civilians and people they call the enemy, but we don't even know who they're firing at. But they're leaning more and more into a situation would appear to carry all the effects of an invasion.
Exactly. You see, there have been two other extreme efforts, and it really seemed 2 years ago in August, in September, there was going to be a beginning of a massive U.S. bombardment.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole population was alerted. Mm-hmm. The U.S. was unable to get the U.N., then they were unable to get NATO, and then sort of everyone alerted. It turned out they couldn't even get the U.S. Congress because overwhelmingly the population was against it.
Yeah.
They've gone at it through a different angle, a different tack, and now they claim to be fighting terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's more popular, and certainly ISIL is an absolutely horrendous group, but who has armed them? Who has allowed them to exist? It's absolutely through Saudi Arabia and Turkey with complete U.S. connivance. So they have a reprehensible enemy they claim to be fighting. And we can look at the way Turkey is fighting the Islamic State. One bombing for the Islamic State and 175 bombings in three different waves against the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an example because the Kurds were actually making great gains against the Islamic State, the ISIL forces. So we see that this U.S. basing rights in Turkey means further, if this is going to be targeted, it certainly seems, and we should be on the alert, against Syria itself and not against the very forces that they have helped to create.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the sovereignty of Syria is being shredded here and nonchalantly through the invocation of terror, but terror is a universal phenomenon, and Syria, obviously, they could put an end to it very quickly. All they do is recognize Syria's sovereignty and collaborate with Syria against those terrorists.
Exactly.
If they were serious, let's put it that way.
If they were serious, literally cutting off the funding.
Yes.
It's been quite a bit on the European media that there are 100 trucks a day, long lines of trucks going into Syria from Turkey with supplies to the Islamic State. I mean, you can't keep an army of this size without real backup. And that's what they have from Turkey.
Yeah.
And it's all, of course, any of these convoys could be stopped. You know, there's enormous satellite reconnaissance over the entire area at every moment and drones, but they're not used against ISIL.
A very dubious exercise. We're speaking to Sarah Flounders, and Sarah, I want to ask. This seems like this is a new kind of event. I believe, and I'm getting the impression you're making this available. If people go online, or go, pardon me, they can go YouTube, they can, and can watch it as it happens. Am I right?
That's right, and that's what makes it so interesting, along with being the meeting at the Solidarity Center, at the International Action Center. Mm-hmm. It's available by conference call. People want to tune in and hear the audio. Oh, I think you've already given that, or should I?
Yeah, it's a ustream.tv/channel/IA Center. And I notice also it can be available. It'll be available at YouTube Tuesday at 11
right.
p.m., which strikes right. me as probably the going to be the most efficient or the easiest to access. It's at iacenter.org.
And then, of course, it's also available on conference call, on audio. Mm-hmm. Folks can just tune in, and a lot of people have the, it's not prohibitive, I don't think, from Canada to the 712-432-6100, mm-hmm. And then the access 418-53-116.
Yeah,
That's the
with the pound sign.
But all of this information is also just available at our website. There's a Facebook site that's available. You can link to it through that. And the idea is by making this really a social media and a multimedia event that the information, the opinions, and the expertise can get out widely, and that we at least put the movement here on alert.
Absolutely.
Where there's great determination, of course, to try to push through the U.S.-Iran sanctions, to end the sanctions on Iran. Mm-hmm. But we need to be aware that there may be real forces who want to, as a way of undermining that,
yes,
literally escalating the entire region.
Well, and you could see a disaster if somebody starts something. It would really,
absolutely.
It just sort of destroy the process. It would start the blaming business, and it would all go down the drain unless people are alert.
That's right. That's right. The same kind of alert that there was 2 years ago where people see it coming mm-hmm. and are mobilized to respond, that is what we need to have again.
Well, Sarah, it's great talking to you. People should go, I think, to YouTube, iacenter.org, and get all the information and actually can watch the preparations for tomorrow, Tuesday, August the 11th, 7:30 p.m. sharp. Thank you very, very much, Sarah.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you so much.
Always great to talk to you. I'll get up. Bye-bye. That's Sarah Flounders, International Action Center. She has one of those names. All you have to do is Google, and Sarah Flounders is available to you, and she's written several really clear, persuasive articles on this, the important issues of the Iran-U.S. Sanctions agreement and also the danger of military escalation along the border of Turkey and Syria. By the way, if you're following this business and trying to understand what's happening, you will notice that the currents and countercurrents of debate and agenda setting is quite turbulent. That you will it's very hard to make out. And when you have turbulence, you better pay attention. So tomorrow night's talks, which you can access. The easiest way I know is to YouTube IA Center, that's capital IA Center, .org, so that you will hear the remarks of Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, who's been a guest on this program, is Sarah Flounders, Margaret Kimberly of Black Agenda Report, Larry Hamm, People's Organization for Progress, Joe Lombardo, United National Anti-War Coalition, and a very important one is Dr. Gias Moussa of the Syrian American Forum. And as we pointed out, talking to Sarah, Arab Canadians, Arab Americans, Muslim Canadians, Muslim Americans, Syrians in particular, Americans, Canadians, come under a lot of, let's put it, duress. It's a difficult position to be because the U.S., Canada, and Britain are finding excuses to interfere in internal affairs of Syria. And when they do, any Syrian should be concerned. and wherever they might be in the world, and there are differences of opinions, no doubt. But the problem is that once violence is carried out by a foreign state, that state will justify itself by treating anybody of that state's identity in a different way. And it's not right. People lose their human rights whenever wars come. They just disappear. And matter of fact, uglier things happen. The United States, if you look at U.S. history of World War I, probably happened in Canada too, but I'm familiar with it more of a state history, is that American citizens got very violent with each other based on their, whether they supported the Central Powers or supported the so-called Allied Powers. And there was people had their homes burned. People fought in streets over this business. And a lot of people had their rights taken away. The famous American labor leader, Eugene Debs, was imprisoned. He even ran for president while in prison. Did rather well, by the way. But this is the problem. Bertrand Russell told us, and we repeat it often on the show, you have your freedoms until you need them. Tuesday, August 11th, 7:30 p.m. At the Solidarity Center in New York, and it's going to be available through various means, but the one is the you can go to ustream.tv/channel/IA Center and you can watch it live, or you can watch it, you can go to YouTube IACenter.org and watch it. But I really urge everybody to do that. We have news from Rwanda. I want to mention it's, let's call it Rwanda news. The intelligence chief, or as the BBC called him, the spy chief of Rwanda, Mr. Karaki, has been released by the British today on the basis. It's a very important case. Spain had asked for his extradition because he is alleged to have been responsible for the death of Spanish nationals and also been guilty of war crimes. Of course, we all understand politics. Rwanda and Britain are actually close. They've had some turmoil. However, I never thought the case had much chance in the beginning because this is a Spanish initiative, not a British initiative. They showed what you might call perfunctory respect for the Spanish authorities when they said this is we have war criminals in your country. It's explained in the BBC, I thought helpful, that the Spanish have laws that permit them to have what they call a universal jurisdiction. And not every state has that. That would mean that if somebody committed a war crime somewhere, they can be charged in a Spanish court, if you can show. That has turned out, we should point out, to be problematic for Spain on two or three occasions, one involving Mr. Pinochet, who was also picked up by the British authorities on the say-so of a Spanish judge. That Spanish judge basically had his political back broken. This idea, which was quite popular at one time, seems to be actually losing ground. The great powers are not interested in it. Spain is not the equal of Britain, and they would like to remind the Spanish of that. So they took all the paperwork on Mr. Karaki and threw it in the wastebasket. But it is a fact that they don't share the same – they don't have the same agreement on international jurisdiction. And it's not, and therefore, by the way, they're not saying he's innocent. All they're saying is our laws don't permit us to send him to Spain. It's on that basis that they say they did this. And as I mentioned, they've done this before in the case of Pinochet. France had an issue with this when they arrested a high-ranking Rwandan official on crimes against humanity. And then quietly let the case go. At the end of the day, what we're talking about is political agreements amongst the great powers. Rwanda is a little bit in the doghouse, but that not so much as that they won't be protected. And Spain is not the equal of Britain. That's what we're being told. And the issue itself is should be, of course, what kind of government do you have in Rwanda? Who put them there? And why aren't the crimes committed in the Congo, for example, highlighted or recognized? The government of Congo has made the case against the Kigali government of Rwanda. And there was a demonstration today, a large one. People were throwing things at the Mr. Karaki and his friends as they were leaving the court, I understand. The people doing that were Congolese. And because Congo was invaded by Rwanda, not once but twice, with massive loss of life, with no authorization, international agreement that they could do that. It is true, it's a protected predator state, pal of the Americans and the British, and therefore it runs amok occasionally and kills people as it wishes and doesn't get into trouble. But the people of Congo have a wonderful case, and that needs to be noted. You could solve this problem, by the way, by punishing and the government of Rwanda for its assaults on Congo, because there's not a dispute about that. As a matter of fact, part of the criminality is that they were wearing a mask. They claimed that they weren't even there. The first time they invaded, they said it wasn't them. It was them. And it's now is widely known. Of course, it was known at the time, but they didn't say it was. You want to remember Mr. Kagame is a bold-faced, bare-faced, I'll take both words, bold, bare, liar. He said it wasn't him the first time they invaded. Oh, no, that's not my troops, he said. Well, it was indeed his troops. And they attacked UN refugee camps. Actually, there were people here doing cartwheels, they called human rights, you might say human rats, who thought it was okay to attack a refugee camp because allegedly there were bad people in it. So you can go ahead and fire cannons into it. You can throw grenades into it. You can commit all. That's what Rwanda did. So the people of Congo are frankly infuriated. One of the, if you want to know the, or you should note, that the ugliness today was of a sort that the Congolese, anyone with a Rwandan name, apparently, they were attacking. There was a reporter there who had a Rwandan name. He happens to be a Hutu and happens to be an opponent of Paul Kagame. But the Congolese are not making distinctions. They know they were invaded from Rwanda. They know that the world thinks it's funny, and they want something done about it. The Congolese have lost more lives now than all those wars going on in Burundi and Rwanda put together. The Congolese have lost more lives. But everybody in the West has a smirk on their face, starting with Human Rights Watch and Amnesty, why anybody calls them human rights. Phil, you're familiar with this in the church. They say you can't tell a priest by his collar, right? And all religions say that. You can't tell a mullah by his beard, etc. No. If someone says he's for human rights, you're permitted to laugh in his face. Because if he ignores the invasion of the Congo, for example, and the attack on a UN refugee camp, he's a liar, he's a hypocrite, and he ought to be stripped of any claim to being interested in human rights. But that, unfortunately, is not the case. People are not paying attention. At any rate, to me, this issue with Mr. Karaki is a side issue. The major one is the right of the Rwandan people to have the original agreement, Arusha agreement, which said that you could have multi-party, you could have open and fair elections, free and fair elections, and that people would be permitted to have their publications and have their voices heard and known. That is not allowed in Rwanda. If it were allowed, Mr. Karaki would disappear. But that takes us to another matter, which we're going to call Burundi, which we might talk about later. I think we're going to be talking shortly with Brett Grote, I hope. At least we're attempting to reach Mr. Grote at the moment. You're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And we have this issue. We want everybody to be aware. You can go to various places for this. By the way, Phil, you have some of the sites there in front of you, don't you, Dave?
For the Syria after the Iran-U.S. sanctions agreement, and that's tomorrow night. And you can watch it live on Ustream, www.ustream.tv/channel/IA Center. And you can also watch it on YouTube by 11 p.m. at IA Center. I think they mean by that that they'll have it on YouTube by 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's other announcements we better make as well. We have on August 17 and August 21st at a different book list. Do you have that?
Yes, I do. On August 17th, that's a week tonight at 7 p.m. at a different book list, 746 Bathurst Street. That's just south of Bloor. Pan-Africanism Today. Join us as we present a discussion of Pan-Africanism Today. Featured speakers are Dr. Louisa Moreno and Dr. Clem Marshall. And on the 21st, which is Friday of next week, same time, same place, different book list, 746 Bathurst Street, Black Lives Matter, leaders of Black Lives Matter movement will present an update on their current actions, their perspective on current issues and future and plans for the future. Of course, this is the first anniversary of the shooting of Michael Brown in Missouri, and there's been more police violence on the occasion.